Pakistan to the opinions given by the individual host and their guest do not necessarily reflect those of Para X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
The Paranormal View. The Paranormal View. The Paranormal View.
You are about to enter a world that's not new. A world that will inspire you with pondering to do. A world known only as the Paranormal View.
Time now for the Paranormal View.
The Paranormal View from the Power X Radio Network. The Paranormal View.
And welcome everybody right here to the Paranormal View on the Para X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. Wonderful crowd. It's a lot of places. It's cold, rainy, or snowy, and good time just to come in here and in the warmth and have a good time chit-chatting. So tonight, our guest that we were supposed to have, Marie D. Jones, had a family emergency and was not going to be able to be with us tonight, but we are rescheduling her, so that'll still be a great show, and looking forward to it. Tonight, though, I have with us Kat Cloco.
Hello.
Barbara Duncan.
I'm here.
And Jeffrey Gould.
Hello, hello. Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year to everyone.
Yes.
Yay. Our first show of the year. We've also now...
Actually, this is my third anniversary as a co-host.
Oh, that's good. True.
Congratulations. You aren't going to have another one of those nights, are you?
No. Pretty much since that week, I've never laid eyes on creepy person.
Creepy person, huh? You make it sound like creepy pasta.
Well, the thing was the manager of the building liked me a lot, and I house sat and walked her blind cocker spaniel, and I got her cats when she was away. So at one point, she after I got settled with my friends in Altadena, she said, "Oh, do you still want this? Some of the stuff you had in a bag?" I'm like, "Oh, that's right." So I came down to get it, and our creeper friend, our new name, was walking Dumbledore, and she's literally, and I'd been inside with the manager, Lynn, for a while, chatting away, and as I went out, she went out to check the mail, and I was about to leave, and I had the bags in my hand, and I was almost scot-free, as it were, and creepy girl says, "I'm very uncomfortable that you're here." I'm like, "I don't care, so what, you know, whatever." And I go to Lynn, I said, "Lynn, are you listening to this? Here's the manager of the building who really didn't like my being kicked out, you know, as it were." Mm-hmm. And she just laid into creepy girl, "You know, how dare you, she's Andrew's my friend too, and you're not gonna tell me who I can't have over." I was like, "I would love to stick around to watch this more, but I think I'll be going."
Wow.
Since we don't actually have a guest, you aren't throwing out no bios tonight and introducing somebody. So just want to let everybody know that tonight is kind of a question night. If you do have a question for any of the hosts, feel free to send them to either Ceiling Cat, Cat Paraview, Jeffrey Gould, or myself, and we will get those questions answered right away. Sherry said, "Let's have a fruitcake recipe night."
I like that idea.
Like I said, we got question night. Also, we're going to be talking some about... would you want to do an investigation or an event with the Paranormal View, and where? We've got some locations that we've been thinking about, but nothing positive. We want to make sure that we would have enough people who would want to actually go on an investigation with us, because it's not going to be free, and of course it's not going to be a lot. We won't go to some place that's going to cost a lot of money. But if you would like to do that, please let us know, and we will see where we can get to go to. And let's see what else.
Well, the Whaley House just got thrown into the hat.
Woohoo! Where is the Whaley House?
San Diego-ish, I think, isn't it?
Really? Barbara didn't know that. Where's it at, Barbara?
Yeah, well, that's going to take a 9-hour bus ride to get there. Oh, wait.
It's in San Diego.
Really? And I don't know who would be going there, but I seriously doubt if I'd be able to.
I would go.
Well, I would. Say I wouldn't go. I just said I doubt if I'd be able to go. That's a long way, unless I can get that 9-hour train ride.
Yeah, the mythical 9-hour train ride.
Yeah.
Which is why I was just laughing maniacally in the background.
Or maybe we can find a wormhole or something, you know?
There you go.
Yeah.
Pick them up by target.
We're also going to be talking a little bit about if you've ever thought that you might like to write a paranormal book about locations to investigate, something like that. We're going to be talking about some of the things that you need to know about that, how to do it. And if we have some time, we're going to also throw in some EVPs tonight. So we got lots, and I'm sure that Barbara's chomping at the bits to talk some, and Jeff, because I know they don't get to talk a whole lot. They keep their mics muted most of the time.
Well, it's because you're typing and typing. I got Puka on my lap right now, so you can turn your little head off for you.
Have I lost?
I was going to say, by the way, Henry, that you remember our friend Maria Olson, who's been a guest on our show and is a film actress and producer.
Right.
She actually was featured in a horror film called The Whaley House, which would be a much better horror film if it was named anything other than The Whaley House, because it completely has almost nothing to do with The Whaley House. It's just a haunted house movie. But it's done in such a way as to, you know, like, it was like when the Amityville Horror movie came out, the first one, and anyone who'd read the book and saw the movie saying, why does this even have the same title?
Hmm.
Yeah, so it sort of went a little off script with its source material, but it was an okay horror, I mean, it was an okay Rob ghost story movie, but, you know, If you're looking for information on the Whaley House, there's actually there are a couple of good documentaries about it, though. I think the Travel Channel has done one or two, and things like that.
Bonnie,
yeah.
It's one of the most haunted. It's famous for being super haunted.
Yeah, it's also famous for having a staff that doesn't really talk about it.
Hmm.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, they're kind of growling, you know, trying to, you know, icky about that, even though it's well known. You know, like,
yeah, because if I remember now, they may have taken them down, but there used to be like plexiglass to protect some of the rooms and the doorways, so you could only look into the room, but you couldn't actually walk into it. I don't know if they've taken it down, but I used to see so many pictures of people who have used their camera's flash and swore up and down that they were orbs, and I'm like, no. Learn how to use your cameras, people. This was a good decade ago, but there have been some interesting photographs of faces in window panes. But then again, I want to say that maybe the mind is playing tricks.
Yeah.
When you're looking at something.
If it's
Paradelia.
Paradelia.
Yeah.
If it was me, I'd be walking into the plexiglass.
I'm pretty sure I'd do the same thing.
Well, I'm pretty sure if they have plexiglass across the entire doorframe, they would have to have some kind of indication that it's solid, like a like a thread or something going across it or something. Something visible so you don't just walk right into it. Like, there's an episode of Veep I was watching where Louis Dreyfus turns around and walks through a plate glass window because he doesn't realize the door had been closed. But normally with those kind of places, I know with William S. Hart's home, which I found out too late was haunted after I'd already taken the tour, thank you very much, they just had the red velvet ropes, so you could look into the room, but you really couldn't walk in there. Hmm. But I've heard tales that staff who goes into his sister's room, and she had been bedridden very sickly for the last several years of her life, they would be briskly pushed out by an unseen force.
Well, CC, are you there? Are you able to talk now?
I can talk.
Oh, okay.
I've always been able to talk.
You've been awful quiet, though. You got a big party going on there or something?
No, I was just first chance to have some dinner. So.
Oh, well, yeah. Go right ahead and eat. You can eat fast.
I am not going to munch with the mic on.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You can go ahead and eat real fast, then you can be free to talk. How's that sound?
Yeah, there we go. Yes, I have snackage.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Paranormal parfait, I have to say.
It's a smorgasbord.
Let's talk about a few of the places maybe that that we could put up to see if somebody would want to actually do an investigation with us. Hillview Manor.
That would be nice. I've had lots of luck there.
That's I think they're last time I looked, it's like $50 a person. During the week, on the weekend, it's a little more. I think it's 10 people's $500. On the weekend, 10 people's $600 or $650, something like that. I'm not sure which one it was. But and it's that much for every additional person that you have. But $50 to $65 isn't a bad price to do a place like that. We have had some good EVPs from Hillview Manor, and you've got to see lots of those little critters walking around that looks black or whatever, you know.
That makes us sound like cockroaches.
What do you call them?
No, we saw shadow black people. Critters? Oh, jeez. No, it was the phantom nurse that people have claimed to have seen. I believe I saw her as well as another spirit. So yeah, that was critters, really. Make it sound like it's a ghost of a raccoon or a bat.
Well, you never can tell.
It's true.
That's more like Mansfield then.
Yeah, actually, yeah, more like Penhurst, I'm gonna have to say. I liked Penhurst. It was really neat seeing the architecture. Very sad place, but there's a lot of holes in walls. They're still rehabilitating a lot of those buildings, and you could definitely see where raccoons, opossums, squirrels, what have you, had gotten in at times. So, and yes, bats do seem to really love me, as Sherry in the chat room. Another fun one would be, and I'm not actually sure of the price, would be Prospect Place in Dresden, Ohio. And that is an old, it's well known for being haunted here in Ohio, at least. It was a major stop on the Underground Railroad. It actually is an Italianate style Victorian building. It was a farmhouse. And it was owned by, I believe, the Eddy family, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
And it has a cupola on the top. There's a dance floor on the third floor, and then there's a small cupola on the top. And the purpose of it was for scouts to be able to see when groups of runaway slaves were coming through the cattle field so that they could signal down to the basement to open these super large barnhouse doors so they can run directly from the fields into the basement without much issue. And I've seen multiple apparitions in that place. And it has lots of bats, too, on the first and second floors. But I've actually had a shadow person follow me to the restroom. And then while I was sleeping on the couch, another investigator claimed to have seen a shadow man bend over to look at me. He walked up to the couch and bent over and looked at me. So it's interesting. Anyway, that's my vote would be there. Or I wrote about it for my second book, The Old Licking County Jail, if they would have us.
Right. Do you know prices on that place?
They may have changed since Ghost Adventures were there. But they were the season finale for Ghost Adventures, so a lot of people may have seen them a few months ago. But I was there right after the team finished filming. So I was there interviewing staff members and Misty Medley, I think who we were going to have on the show last month. She is a volunteer there, and she's seen lots of things happen. So it's an interesting place, very creepy, because it's a very large county jail. And it's a 19th century county jail, so it's broken up into the actual jailhouse, and then at the front is the sheriff's offices, the sheriff's living quarters, and the matron's living quarters on the third floor up front. So you're able to have a decent sized group, I'm going to say maybe 50 to 60 people, and if you break them up between that and the basements and everything, you should be able to get good groups and not have too much interference.
And
is that the same jail that sometimes they see somebody hang in the courtroom? Or
no.
Is that a different
jail? That's a different jail. There's no courtroom.
Right.
Oh, okay. I remember seeing one of these documentaries, like the scariest places in the country, and one of them had where they had the courtroom as part of the jail, and where they put up the courtroom had been where, when before it was built, had a hangman exhibit.
Isn't that the Whaley House?
No, I don't.
It's
know.
Around there. It's in California.
It may
I
be.
Think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. No. Old Licking County Jail just got, I'm gonna say, released to the public to visit around 2011, 2012. So it wouldn't have been included in one of those documentaries yet.
Now, there's also another place that I haven't been to. I hear that it's pretty good, and that's Trans-Allegheny.
Yes. Yes, that's one of my places I want to visit.
And is that in Pennsylvania or Western?
West Virginia.
Virginia, yeah. Okay. We can check and look in prices on those also, but we can put those on a list,
mm-hmm.
and people can, if they want to do an investigation with us, they can everybody start, letting us know where they would like to go to like that. So that's
actually, we should try to find places that are in the middle of the country, since I don't know where all of our listeners are, but where everyone can kind of get in. Like, we all have equal distances to have to drive.
You mean like the Stanley or something?
Stanley, that would be expensive. There's the Eureka Springs Resort in Arkansas.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. That's one that I hope to visit when I go back out to Missouri to finish filming the movie.
Yeah. And is the Limp Mansion still open?
Which mansion?
The Limp. I'm not sure whether it is or not. I've seen something on TV about it just in the last few days, but I don't know if it's still open or not.
Yeah, I can't remember. I get it and the Felt Mansion mixed up a lot because they're similar. I think they're fairly similar in architecture. So, and they're both in the Midwest. So I kind of get confused. I get too many locations and I get confused sometimes.
See, I know there's Hillview, or not Hillview, but Waverly.
That one's expensive, though.
That one is expensive, and it'd be more expensive than what people would actually want to spend to go to, more like.
And from what I understand, they're already booked up for the year.
Really? Already?
They book up. They open this, January 1st. Now, this is word of mouth. If anybody would like to correct me, feel free to do so. But they generally fill up very quickly. They open up on the 1st for investigations and get booked up.
So they're already booked through all through 2015.
They may be, or all the decent weekends have already been taken.
Well, there's other places you can go that I guess isn't going to really cost you a lot to investigate, but you'd be investigating outside, and you'd have to do it like in a daytime. Can't be after, I don't know, 8 o'clock at night or something like that. And that's Gettysburg.
I was going to say, I figured you meant Gettysburg.
We could just make it a paranormal tour of Gettysburg for the paranormal view.
Yep.
They do that with Darkness Radio. They went to Transylvania that way. They had 30 spots, and people flew to Transylvania, and they just went on a tour visiting locations.
Hmm.
But yeah, they're doing one for Scotland, I believe, this year.
Nice.
That's still money, too.
Yes, it was.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
He needs a 9-hour boat cruise across the Atlantic for that.
Watch out for... Oh, icebergs?
Yeah.
Is that too soon?
Well, I'm sure.
Actually, wasn't last year the 100th anniversary?
I believe so. Yes, 2014. Yeah.
That sort of passed. Nobody really did a whole lot about pointing that out.
The History Channel would beg to differ, but they were the only ones that really remembered that it was.
Oh. Everybody's wanting to go to Scotland. No, thanks.
Hey, it's the home of my ancestors.
And
your ancestors going to pay for all us to come over there?
No, they're kind of dead, so that's impossible. They didn't leave me anything behind to pay with, so...
Wow. Well, if anyone has ideas for different places... feel free to send them to us or put them here in the chat room, and be some that we're going to think about and go over.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, Kat. It looks like Nyland in the chat room seems to be jumping up and down about Scotland. Maybe she'll just come with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know if I can prove my ancestry being part of the Stirling clan, I can visit Stirling Castle for free.
Yeah.
But I have to prove. I also was part of the Buchanan clan, but since it's no longer around, the castle is a ruin. I don't need to do that. I can just go visit it.
My friends that I house in Catsid for went over to Scotland, and my friend John, who out of the family, was not seeming to get much headway with the locals. They were, especially like at the inns and such. Mm-hmm. And they didn't seem to be, they weren't really being treated like, all you stupid Americans. But all of a sudden, when they found out that his wife's name was McLeod, then all arms were open and everybody was happy about it and everything. It was like, well, you just needed to introduce her first.
That's funny.
Well, you do have also Mansfield. I'm pretty sure that their price is probably under $65, probably a person. I'm not sure exactly how they do it. We always look it up on the site.
Yeah, their Friday and Saturday rates are more expensive than their normal week rates.
Right.
And when I talked to Scotty, who runs the ghost tours, he always suggests doing it during the week because you have fewer people. Like, it's much more manageable. But the caveat is, if you have to work during that week, it's difficult. But it is easy to get to. It's about 2 hours north of Columbus, Ohio, and an hour and a half south of Cleveland off of I-71. So it's pretty easy, and there's lots of hotels around for you to stay at.
Right. Yeah, I got to go up there this past year, and me and Tim Shaw got a private tour, you might say, from one of the workers there.
Was it Scott?
I can't remember. I don't think it was Scott.
Aww.
Scott's one that kind of runs the place. This was one of the other guys. But
was it Keith?
No, it wasn't Keith either. I've got his name somewhere. Matter of fact, I got his card.
Nice.
I can always look it up.
Yeah.
And let you know. But yeah, it was pretty interesting. Of course, there was a lot of people there because when I went, it was one of the events for ghost hunters. And there was lots and lots of people that come there to those type of events. So you wasn't really going to get a whole lot of evidence, you might say.
Well, not audio, but it was at a Hillview Manor event with taps with ghost hunters that I saw the two shadow people.
Right.
And you got that EVP responding to your coffee question. So I wouldn't completely discount it.
Well, no, I wouldn't discount that you can't get it. I'll say that we didn't get any the time we was up there. Especially during in the cells and stuff, because there's so many people walking around. But we did feel like that there was somebody watching us from one of the upper tiers. You could just sense that. And then we got to hear a lot of the stories about the showers and the different things there, and throughout the different place where people have seen things and heard things and all that good stuff. So it's pretty interesting, though.
As long as it isn't somebody like, you know, ghost hunting TV shows where they go in and they keep, you know, if they get an EVP, they're lucky, but they never really get anything on film.
True. Very few.
Is it possible when you sense something looking down from the upper tiers that may have just been the atmosphere of the place, or like, I'm in a haunted place, and so you kind of get that sensation that you're being watched, or you really got a sense like, you know, doom and such like that?
I never had a sense of doom. It was just like you had a sense that somebody was watching you. Yeah, it wasn't anything scary or anything like that. You just had this feeling, kind of.
Well, also local to you that I would love to visit someday is Post Town.
Oh, yes. Post Town is interesting.
Post Town's a good place. That one's not very expensive either. And you can book that for a group. So.
Yeah. And it's fairly active. And, yeah, they're good friends of our show. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that'd be a good place if people wanted to come to this area. Lots of other places around the area that you can visit. You got Ryan's Tavern. That's not far from Post Town.
Oh my goodness, we could do a haunted tour of Cincinnati.
Yes, lots of places there too.
Yes.
So, are you writing down different locations then?
I am.
Okay.
I'm writing down what we're talking about.
Moof put down Valeska.
Yeah, Valeska ex-murder house.
Yeah. Have you talked to anybody that's actually gone there? I mean, is there anything there? Is it just notoriety because it's been on some of the ghost?
I have never spoken to anyone who has personally been there because it's so flipping far from Ohio. No one has driven out that far.
It's not in Ohio. Where is it?
It's in Iowa.
Iowa.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, the other. Oh.
As Moof says, it's me.
Yeah, it's, let's see. How did they put that? Is this heaven? That was from the baseball movie. Baseball movie, I suppose you didn't see yet. When and one of the ghosts asking, he says,
"Is that Field of Dreams?"
Yep, that's it. Field of Dreams. All right. Anyway, so you guys got anything else? I assume that Barbara is pretty close to being done eating by now.
I can't think of anything in the Midwest.
Yeah, we have a lot of corn, don't we?
Yeah.
Well, there is a lot of corn.
There's a lot of corn. Bobby suggested that people write in places that haven't been featured on TV that we may be able to do.
And, you know, that's one of the things we're going to be talking about a little bit later in the show is the big name places. Lots of people goes with groups and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you get smaller places and places that aren't as well known, a lot of the private residences, you might say, to where you can actually get a lot of good stuff. We've been to a couple just around here, and excellent source of EVPs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The one little house that we did, we had some great. Great activity in that place. The girls' house that we've been to quite a few times. Lots of great stuff there, and I'm trying to get.
I really don't think private residences should be something we have an event at.
Not for an event. No, I'm just saying.
No, she's talking about events.
Well.
You mind if we have a barbecue in your yard?
Okay.
There's lots of stuff in Chicago. Moose suggested Chicago, and yes.
Kat probably knows quite a few places around Chicago.
I know of a few, mostly from Ursula Bielski, who runs the Haunted Chicago Tours and knows a lot about Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. And she's also a fellow paranormal author, so.
Hmm. Well, yes. Cemeteries wouldn't be a good place to try and take groups to, though.
Could be. It depends. I did that in Indiana, but we had the permission of the sheriff's office to do so.
Yeah.
But we have also been heckled by people and also yelled at by others who were visiting for basically trespassing, even though we had been given permission to go there by the sheriff's department, but not showing consideration for the dead and the families of those who are deceased. So, yeah, that one's a little bit trickier. That one's an issue of opinion.
And most places won't allow anybody in there after dark, just because of safety reasons.
Yeah, I accidentally ran into a drug deal one time. That was great.
Oh, excuse me. You guys continue. Go right ahead.
Oh, man.
Well, there's a lot of divots and whatever, and you stumble in the dark.
And floor and flat
gravestones.
Flat. And the thing
grave slabs.
And grave slabs. And the thing is you don't even see them, and they're not flush with the grass. There's always like that border around it, so you can, you know, strip right over those.
Yeah, so
I was scrolling back and somebody was asking a question to me in the chat room and I didn't get a chance to see what it is. It was something about background.
There's a lot of people that docents that do cemetery tours out here because of the famous people that live are that are buried there. But you know, it gets tricky. It gets very tricky.
Okay, I think what we're going to do is take us a break.
HHM Holmes site, however, it is now a post office.
Yes, the Murder Castle.
HHM Holmes?
You can't, HH Holmes.
Yeah, somebody brought
it
up.
Was that the one with all the labyrinths and all the torture rooms?
It was. Yep. It was raised in 1896. So it hasn't existed for over 100 years. It's now a post office. You can investigate the original basement, but you need permission by the United States Postal Service to do so.
Huh. Wow.
And the only person I know of who has actually done it is I think Jeff Mudgett, who's the great-great-great-grandson of Herman Mudgett, also known as H.H. Holmes. So, yeah.
Wow.
Well, I guess that would make sense to something that had so much pain and torture turn into a post office.
Yeah, I'm sure you get
75 people online and one window open.
Yeah, I've seen that before, too. All right, we're going to take a break, and I guess Kat can take us out, and Barbara will bring us back.
Yes. Eventually. Okay, eventually. Everyone.
Yeah.
Once I get over my giggle fit. Everyone, you are listening to The Paranormal View with your hosts, Henry Foyster, Jeffrey Gould, Barbara Duncan, and myself, Kat Cloco. Happy New Year. Happy 2015, everyone. Tonight is a paranormal hodgepodge night. There's more to come after the break.
It's always time for the dead to shine in Hollywood. The legendary Dearly Departed Tours has stepped up their ghostly game by offering the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour. Dearly Departed has long been an orb of hope in the paranormal world, having been featured on television's Haunted History and Haunted Collector. Their terrible tales have been made infamous in Marla Brooks' The Ghosts of Hollywood books. The new Ghosts and Legends Tour is a 10-block, 70-minute dusk-time stroll down the Boulevard of Broken Dreams. You'll be guided through the golden age of Hollywood and see where the unearthly Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, and the calamitous Black Dahlia are still said to linger. You'll see Hollywood's gothic hotels, legendary theaters, and restaurants, never forgetting their permanent occupants. No stranger to investigations, Dearly Departed Tours has first-hand knowledge of some of these hauntings. For details of the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, find Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, dearlydepartedtours.com, or call 1-855-600-DEAD.
Welcome to Paranormal News on the Para-X Radio Network. Paranormal News is produced by Genesis Creations Entertainment. I'm your host, Bonnie Vent. This broadcast is sponsored by Collectibles Today and Haunted Collectibles. Go to www.sdparanormal.com for more information. Mark Steinis of Entertainment Tonight sat down with Jennifer Love Hewitt to talk about the fire at Universal Studios a few months ago and the new season of The Ghost Whisperer. Here's a clip.
Tell me about this episode that we're going to see Friday night and the strange coincidence that kind of all happened around.
We were getting ready to send our scripts the day that the backlot here at Universal caught on fire for our episode Firestarter, which is all about this girl who starts fires in Grandview and does all of this stuff. And then the news happened. I could see the smoke and everything. And so I came down and I was like, what's on fire? What's on fire? You know, because this is like a home for us. Yeah. And when they said the town square, I was like, that's Grandview.
How much was in jeopardy getting this season back together, knowing that you lost one of the major parts of the show?
It was really hard because we loved filming on the back lot and it was a part of our history. We felt really lucky because it was Back to the Future's place in the first place, and so we just felt great when we got it. On a whole level for Universal, it's obviously much more devastating for the studios than it was for us personally. But, you know, it was tough because now we've had to sort of move Grandview. Grandview's going to look a little different this year to people.
Was it ever in jeopardy to get this first episode on?
I thought that we were going to have to delay for a while, and they were able to sort of just, you know, pick things up pretty quickly, get us back going. I will say this about this season. I don't think we've ever had a season this big on this show. We are going to shock the audience like you wouldn't believe. And people have to remember that not everything on Wisteria Lane is as it seems. Not everything in Grandview is as it seems.
Our last story comes from Cake.com. Wichita's Cowtown Museum has brought in the Wichita Paranormal Research Society. Here's a clip.
Well, it's a ghost hunt, Old West style, all part of an event at Cowtown, and you'll be able to experience it this Halloween. Cake's Natasha Tropa has more on how the museum is hoping to give you a closer encounter with history, Natasha.
That's right, Larry. The museum brought in the Wichita Paranormal Research Society overnight, hoping to nab some evidence to the mysterious activity many say they've experienced at Cowtown, and that evidence will be revealed during the haunted historical Cowtown event.
Can you give us a sign of your presence?
It's a lot of room to cover, and there's so much history that, you know, we really get excited about it.
It's not Halloween yet, but for members of the Wichita Paranormal Research Society, seeking out ghostly encounters is part of the everyday grind.
We take a more scientific approach. We try to have equipment to back up any kind of experiences.
The team's current mysterious focus, Cowtown. As the museum gets ready for its haunted historical Cowtown event, it called in the team to investigate the area.
Did you hear that? A lot of visitors, the first thing they ask are the buildings haunted?
Volunteer Sherry Gaskins has had her own encounters with the unknown at Cowtown.
And the back candlestick came up out of the candelabra, up over the top of the others, and fell on the floor in front of the table.
She hopes the team's investigations will give some thrills, chills, and answers during this year's Halloween event. So, armed with everything from electromagnetic frequency recorders to infrared cameras, the team sets out checking every dark corner of Cowtown.
We have caught some audio, and we have caught some photographs.
It takes a lot of patience, an open mind, and even more patience from this team.
We must catch EVPs, which are recordings that you don't hear them with your neck ear.
While the results of the night won't be revealed until later in October, this investigation is filled with strange bumps, whispers, and devices recording, well, something you just can't explain.
Never with a mic.
For information on these stories, please go to www.sdparanormal.com and the Paranormal News feed page. Don't forget, sign up for a free subscription to Paranormal News. Thanks for joining us today on Paranormal News. If you'd like to sponsor or advertise on Paranormal News, please send us an email at parax.news@aol.com. You can listen to Paranormal News on the ParaX Radio Network at www.para-x.com. Please check out their other fine shows and hosts, or join us at paranormalnews.mypodcast.com. Until next time, I'm your host, Bonnie Vent.
Hi, this is Hollywood Haunt writer Marla Brooks, and you're listening to the ParaX Radio Network.
So, you had a lucid dream about living in Atlantis, teaching telepathy, and you're wondering what it means. We can actually help. We are the School of Metaphysics, a 40-year-old international resource for people who have questions, big, juicy, deep questions about life and death, and everything in between. 16 branches in the U.S., self-guided study online, weekend courses, webinars, and books. Send us a telepathic fax or visit our website, www.som.org. This could be the start of something really interesting.
You know, there's nothing like a great memory of a great time. And if you grew up during the 1950s, 60s, 70s, or 80s, boy, have we got the memories for you. There was no time more innocent than the 1950s or 60s, nor was there a time more politically explosive. Hi, this is Steve Shockley, a.k.a. The Shock. Join me live every Friday and Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern for a Baby Boomer Rock with a Shock sock hop on rockwithashockradio.com.
Whether you need help putting together your event, looking for a celebrity, or just want to pump up the excitement, look no further than Ideal Event Management. Ideal Event Management is a top-rated paranormal events organizer. They also represent some of the biggest names and personalities in the paranormal community. Contact Mark at 413-478-3642 or check out their website at idealeventmanagement.com.
The creepy and the kooky, mysterious and spooky, they all talk gobbledygooky.
the Para-X family. The shows are paranormal, not stuffy but informal. The topics are abnormal, the Para-X family.
They're strange, deranged, unrestrained.
So grab your favorite brew, it's time to rendezvous, as we give awards to the Para-X family.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Paranormal View here on Para-X Radio Network. We want to thank everybody for joining us tonight, both in the chat room and from all around the world. And tonight we have listeners in the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, Ireland, Haiti, and Unknown.
Oh, the Unknown is back.
Yes, it's returned.
Yes.
Return of the Unknown.
Maybe we ought to, you know, take lots and try and guess where the Unknown is at.
I like to think it's a UFO being piloted by Bigfoot orbiting the moon.
With Elvis.
With Elvis.
Co-piloting. With Elvis. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's somebody who's in one of those wormholes or something and listening.
Oh, it could be.
Could be.
Yeah. Could be.
You know, like that's on the grid. Different, different dimension, you know?
You mean like where Jeff just disappeared off to?
Do not say that. Did Jeff disappear?
Oh, yes, he did.
He did.
Oh, man, why you guys...
He's in the nether regions.
Oh, another world.
Another world.
Okay, is he off everything? No.
No, he's in the chat room.
All right, let me see if I can...
That's where he's just like, hey, guys, I'm disconnected. Let me
see. Oh, well, I can bring up, while we're waiting for Jeff to come back, this wonderful little news article from, I believe it's Idaho.
Okay.
And it made the ABC News.
Oh, my.
And that is the surveillance camera figure that they caught at a local high school.
Oh.
That the it's probably one of the best videos of what we would think would be a ghost I've ever seen.
Oh my!
And you actually seen it?
It is on. I just put the link in Skype, and I will put it in the chat room. It is a link to the video, and the lights start flickering, and with the lights on, you see not a shadow person, not a white mist, but a very defined, translucent, almost shimmering figure walking through there.
And where was it located at?
Idaho.
In Idaho.
The entire state, or what?
It is... Hold on.
I just got redialed.
The Pocatello High School.
Hmm. Well, you know... They could be getting ready.
In Pocatello, Idaho.
They could be getting ready for that big one to hit California, and they're just getting ready to tie up their boats in Idaho.
Yeah, it could very well be.
Wow, that is a crazy video.
Isn't that really good? That is really something. It's not a normal, what we would think of as ghost, and very hard to duplicate.
Yeah.
They're like almost a shimmering thing. The janitors, other employees say that they've heard toilets flushing, lockers slamming, pianos around playing when nobody's around. Although teachers and students say they've seen strange shadowy figures in the hallways. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting, though. But a very interesting video to check out.
Yes, it is.
I will definitely
one of the more realistic
about that after the show.
Yeah, it's very almost theatrical, I would say, because the lights flicker right before it shows up. What I will say is the cameraman who was filming the CC footage needs to learn how to hold the camera straight, because I'm getting seasick. Yeah. It rolls around a lot.
Well, yeah, they didn't put it on a tripod in front of the closed caption cameras. Videos. The camera is a stationary security camera, so it's not like that they somebody just went in and did this. Hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's rather fascinating.
You know, the place where we go to in Tim Bolton, Ohio, the Bell Nursing Home, they have cameras that run full time through the week when there's no one there. And there was one of the rooms right across from where the cameras were at the nurse's station. And about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden, light switch turns on in the room and ain't nobody around. And the camera's rolling and caught all that. So that's pretty interesting.
Yep.
Well, the only thing I can think of is if the lights are flickering like that, if it's drawing current.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's the only option I can think of off that, which is, allows it such, I mean, that's pretty clear that it's something there. Mm-hmm. It's not a full apparition. It's not like you could check out and see the person's face, arm, whatever, but it's very defined.
You can definitely see it's something. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, it's a figure walking, okay. But you just can't tell what.
Yeah. It's an alien.
Very interesting. Yeah. Idaho's a little bit too far away from here, and I doubt if the school would let us go in there and investigate.
I've investigated a few schools. They just do it on the down low.
There's a school that's to the east of Cincinnati. School. What is the name of that school? The Wood something or other. Woodrow or something like that. Something like that. I know some people that knows about it anyway.
There's Woodrow High School. That's in Cincinnati, though.
No, this one's just to the east of Cincinnati. Can you remember the name of the community that it's in? I can look it up, though, and let you know later. But
like in Batavia? It's not the Dent Schoolhouse.
No. I've heard of that one also.
Yeah.
No, I can't remember the name of it. Seems like it starts with a W, though, but I'm not sure. How my mind is. Sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not, and everything in between gets all scrambled around, so I have no idea. Anyway, I know some people that does know, and I'll get in contact with them and see, because they have talked about going in there to investigate before. I don't know if they still allow investigations there or not, but it is one of the schools that's supposed to have activity in it. Old schools, I should say.
Okay.
Of course, it's like the Post Town School up here. That's got activity in it, and that would be a good place for people to actually go to and spend an evening, you might say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been by myself, myself and one of the owners of Post Town were in the school by ourselves and heard lots and lots of strange things going on, like things being dragged, desks being dragged, lockers opening and closing on their own, kids running around when her kids were at home, all sorts of crazy things. Flashlights turning on and off. On their own. Yeah.
Darn those kids, get off my lawn.
Yeah.
All right. People that, because it seems like everybody is doing it now, and that's writing a paranormal book. About investigating and places and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to want to write a book and go out and do it, which eventually I'm sure that I'll be one of them. What is some of the criteria when looking for the places to write about?
Well, let's see. I'm going to preface this with first, and I'm assuming this question is aimed towards me.
You're the writer.
Yeah, I'm the writer. I'm going to preface this saying this is based off of my own experience and from what I've experienced with other friends who write, and as a comic book artist who also knows a little bit about just publishing in general with your independent stuff versus working with a publisher. So, and I can't say everything because there are some trade secrets we can't exactly talk about, but so you want to write a ghost book, a haunted history book, like what I've written with Haunted Hoosier Halls, Indiana University, or Ohio's Haunted Crime. The thing that you need to know first is the industry. You need to know what's out there, when it was published, how much information it contains, what it contains, and if you have anything substantial to contribute to the industry. And when I say industry, I mean the whole publishing industry subject matter of paranormal books. When I wrote about Haunted Hoosier Halls, Indiana University, which I'm just going to call about Indiana University for now, there were no books dedicated to just schools, universities, colleges, nothing. That was a completely barren area. And since I'm well versed with what books are published by whom and when I proposed my book idea, the series idea, to Schiffer, it was an underutilized market. And Schiffer liked it, and they accepted it, and now I work with them. Understand that as an author, as a paranormal writer, you get paid twice a year. Twice. April and October, if you work with a publisher. So don't expect to be just swimming through the money. And I will say, as a personal statement, I do not make a living off of my paranormal books. I make a living drawing comics. So I'm just going to be very open and lay that in front of everyone and say, yeah, you're not going to become a millionaire doing this. You do it for your love. You don't do it for fame, because there's a zillion of us too. So if you have an idea, you want to first write down a few chapters, let's say three chapters, an intro and three chapters. Have an actual idea where you want to go with your book. Like when I wrote about, when I proposed Ohio's Haunted Crime, I'm like, I have a theme. I want to stay with this theme. And I took it to Schiffer, and they make you argue a good reason why they should bother with this book. And there's a lot of paperwork. And if they accept it, then you get a deadline and they go through the contract and everything. One of the easiest things to do, though, to make the entire thing easier, is to actually have writing samples. But don't have the entire book done, because what you start with is not what you're going to end with. I've had friends who have been shopping around entire manuscripts, like 60,000 to 70,000 word manuscripts, which is roughly 200-350 pages, to different publishers, and they've gotten turned down over and over and over again. And it's mainly because they can't do much to the manuscript now. The publishers can't, because it's done. It's not with everyone, of course. There's different publishers, and different head editors are looking for different things. We talked to John Kachuba earlier, and what he was looking for in his writers as the editor for America's Haunted Road Trip is something different than Michael Vahola is looking for. And even he mentioned it on our show a few weeks ago. So it also depends on who your head editor is at each publishing house. For the love of everything, make sure, no matter if you're doing this through a publisher or independent publishing, make sure you have an editor or friends edit your book to make sure you've caught all of your grammatical mistakes. There's always going to be two or three, but you can't have things dying on the porch when you meant dying on the porch. One book I read said dying as in D-Y-E-I-N-G, dying clothes on a porch, when she meant to have the other dying. And it's just simple things like that that you want somebody to edit through. Make sure you have good grammar. No one is ever going to take a manuscript if you cannot have good grammar and punctuation. You cannot capitalize every single word. You have to use periods and commas. My issue is actually commas. I underuse commas or I overuse commas when I write. And my people who edit through my books before I even send it to the publisher just want to tear their hair out. Because they're just like, why didn't you learn this? And I'm like, I did. I'm just bad at it. Plus, I'm dyslexic, so I can write entire sentences backwards. And I have to watch that.
Really?
Yes.
Is there like where your grammar's like Yoda when you write? Or?
It's exactly like Yoda. It's like, to the carriage we go, we are. It will come out like that. And even when I'm speaking, sometimes even on the show, I have to stop myself and... because I realize just before I say a sentence or mid-sentence, I've swapped out my object and verbs in the placement of the sentence, which is one reason why I like Japanese, because it ends its sentences with verbs and we end our sentences with objects or subjects. So I think that That may be one reason why I can do Japanese sometimes better than English. But anyhow, falling off the point. The new thing, and a lot of people are doing now, are self-publishing, and you can do this through a variety of print-on-demand services. Lulu is one that I use for comics, because I do not work for a comic company. I have my own little art studio, and I self-publish my stuff. And how I self-publish my books is actually not too different, or how I self-publish my comic books is not too different from how Schiffer publishes my history books. It's just different scales of consumer consumption. Like Schiffer will print hundreds and hundreds of books at a time while I may print 10. So, but those, it can be equally as, it's pretty difficult. You have to do everything on your own. When you have a publisher, they will do all the marketing for you and send sample books to people that you want it sent to. And while you're self-publishing, you do all the marketing on your own. You do all the writing on your own. You do all the graphics and writing. And yeah, that. But this is the business side, I guess. And I'm boring people because they're like, I don't care about marketing and learning how to make this my business. I guess you guys want to know about the actual writing process and the investigating and everything?
Right.
Okay. So,
you know, it's probably going to be something like when I go out to start investigating and maybe start trying to write a book.
Yeah. So, okay. I'll use my most recent book as an example. And that's Ohio's Haunted Crime, and it will be out this fall, 2015. Yay. So I have submitted my proposal, it's been accepted, and now I'm off into the big wide world. I have 2 years to write a book. They give you usually about 2 years. And first thing I do is, well, actually, when I wrote the proposal, I already had the locations I want to go to already looked up, so I know what to expect. And the thing you need to do is actually contact them if you haven't done so already and ask if they would be interested in being interviewed. And okay, sorry, reading the chat room at the same time is difficult.
You can't do two things at
once. I can't do two things at one time. No, kind of single-minded that way. So I'm going to use Mansfield Reform as an example. And I talked to Scott Strukel or Scotty when writing that. I had been to Mansfield multiple times before I even wrote the book. It is one of the catalysts for me getting the idea to write the book, because there are at the time no books dedicated to just haunted prisons for Ohio. So I'm sorry, if you want to write a book about haunted prisons in Ohio now, that market has been filled by my book. So look elsewhere. But anyhow,
you forgot to add nyan.
No, I'm not going to be that like that. But if you want to write about it about in Pennsylvania, then right ahead. I don't think there's a book there. Anyhow, So yeah, I contacted him and we set up a date and I went to Mansfield to take photographs and interview people. And you have to carry, okay, I do everything through the anthropological ethics standard of ethics, which is basically, I am very, very forefront with, this is what you can expect from me. This is what I will be doing. This is what I will not be doing. My books are basically history books with a little bit of haunted history thrown in. And I make sure that everybody is crystal clear on what to see. So I have release forms that I give to everyone and say, I am going to be interviewing you. I will take whatever you say verbatim. It will show up in the book this way, and they check themselves if they want to be anonymous. They write their names down if they don't want to be. For the first book, I had a man that wanted to be known as like Mr. Crumplebottom or something like that. And that is how he's referenced in the book. He did not use his real name. He chose his own. It was something Mr. Crumplebottom or something equally as ridiculous. It's in the Whispers Estate chapter. And I know it wasn't Crumplebottom, but it was, yeah, it was a ridiculous name.
If that was his name, do you put in parentheses not his real name?
No, I put an asterisk next to it, which is common, just common editing is at the very beginning of a lot of these books, you'll see, even John Kachuba's, I think it was Ghost Hunting Ohio, that, or, Ghost Hunter's book, I can't remember which one it was, there's at the very beginning, it says, if you see an asterisk next to somebody's name, it is not their real name, it's one that's been chosen for them to represent them in the book type of thing. And a lot of people do that because they're still conscientious of they may get some lashback. Yeah, razzing. There may be some consequences to them actually being in a book. Most people, actually everyone except for that one guy, has been very open and said, yep, I believe in the paranormal. My friends know I believe in the paranormal. I have no problems putting my name in the book. And there you have it. So I do interviews. I do a lot of interviews. I do a lot of historical library research or book research, which is hours upon hours upon hours upon hours sitting in local libraries or online through newspaper web archive websites like newspaperarchive.com, which is not paying for any representation, I guess, tonight, but I use them a lot and I have a membership to them. Genealogy websites are another good resource. Find a Grave was very, very helpful. And you spend days upon weeks upon months just searching for stuff. And with my writing, I don't state something unless I have at least one to two articles to back that statement up. And I'm also very cognizant of the people that my words are affecting. For Ohio's Haunted Crime, that is the still living family members of the murder victims I'm writing about. And I'm very, you're walking constantly this fine line of trying to represent things correctly, but yet not pissing anyone off. And that's a fine line, is difficult. And sometimes you kind of can go astray if you're not watching it. So I always get third and fourth opinions with my writing to make sure that what I'm writing is fair and is as neutral as possible. I like just presenting the facts. I do give my own reflections at the end of each chapter. And I say heavily, these are my own thoughts and opinions from what I've read and from the information I've presented to you. But you're more than free to come up with a different idea or a different opinion. Let's see. And then the writing process, that one's pretty fun. I actually write my articles very quickly. It only takes me about 3 days to write a few thousand words. My largest article this time was 10,000 words, and that's about the Mansfield Reformatory, I believe. And I write, because I'm kind of single-minded and ADHD, when I get into hyper-focus, I'll just write an entire article or two within 2 or 3 days, which is kind of intense. So yeah, and then editing can be horrible. The first book was horrible to edit. It took us 3 months to go through 65,000 words, and it was like I wanted to just, I was scratching at my face with my nails. It was just very frustrating. The second book was a lot easier because I'm now a veteran and we got it done within a month. Not even a month, which was great.
Oh, she's a veteran now.
I'm a veteran now of writing. So, and I make sure that in between books, I don't get rusty with writing. So, and that helped a lot.
But they wrote the chat room then.
Yeah. But yeah, that's in a nutshell. That's what you have. I turned my book in, Ohio's Haunted Crime, in November, and I won't see it again until maybe March for some extra editing by my actual editor, who probably graduated with an English literacy degree, and which I do not. I will tell our listeners, I have 2 degrees in anthropology and in Japanese linguistics and culture studies. So I am not an English major, nor am I a history major. So, and you don't have to be actually a college major to do this. You just need to know your market and know how to communicate well with correct grammar and punctuation. I've read too many independent books where they obviously had no one double checking their stuff. And there's a responsibility factor too. Like one book that we read, there was a woman freely admitting that she illegally trespassed onto locations to go ghost hunting. No, 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 no. One, that is horribly unethical. And two, it's just like those really bad criminal Facebook statuses where they freely admit to like stealing 70 people's cell phones and put photos on their Facebook page, and then they're surprised when the police show up at their door. It's just, yeah. So I think as an author, people are going to buy your book, and people expect you to already be a expert at the field that you're writing about. So represent yourself well. Okay, questions.
So now your current book is set for what, autumn of this year?
Mm-hmm.
They don't have an actual date though, because you mentioned they still have back to go over.
It will still go through. There's a person at Schiffer that does the graphics. I don't do the graphics for my haunted history books. Schiffer does. They have people that work in-house that do that. They have people in-house that will go through and edit. Oh, yeah. The one thing I forgot to mention is if you work for a publisher, you must do the coding of your manuscript. At least at Schiffer you do, which is going through all tens of thousands of words that you have written. And making sure that there's basically computer coding in front of them, so they run them through a computer program. Well, yeah, it automatically formats the book for them. So what they will do is in a few months, I will get a mock-up of the book, and I need to make sure everything's okay. And then I don't see it again for another 3 months.
So coding, have you got a list that you go by to code it with?
Yep, and every publisher is different.
Is that a program they provide, or is it something you need to get online, or
no, you learn it and you put it into Word, and for every single bibliographies are the worst. For every single new paragraph that follows a subtitle, you have to put in parentheses, let's say, / text, and then put parentheses around it, like end parentheses, every single time. And you just go through your entire manuscript. This is better than the first time where I had to write whenever there was anything in italics that it needed to be in italics. But it's captions for photographs. Oh, yes, photographs. That's another thing. Things are copyrighted. Lots of things are copyrighted. And lots of other things are also trademarked. like with IU, they have trademarked the facades of all of their buildings. So I could not take a photo of, let's say, the sample gates at Indiana University and put it into the book and not potentially get sued by the university for breaking trademark and copyright infringement. But you could get around that, as what I did, by having an artist make her representation of the sample gates or any other facade building at IU. Because since she drew it, it is her property, her copyright, and since we didn't include a lot of details, the trademark doesn't quite transfer as well. So
that was going through my head when you were saying that, or the workaround, because it's sort of like almost getting like a police sketch artist kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's basically that's what it is. And that was our little clever workaround that I was only aware of because of being an illustrator myself. Basically, any photos, any music, any audio recording that is 1922 up until present day is automatically copyrighted by the content creator, which means, let's say the Paranormal View here, it's technically, I guess, copywritten to Henry. You need his permission to replay it if you were, like, a third party, individual who wanted to play the Paranormal View on your blog post. You would have to have permission from Henry or one of us to be able to do that, because it's us. With my comics, people would have to have my permission to take the representation of the comic images and put them onto their site. The same goes with a lot of old photos that you can see in some, I will say, both self-published and published professionally haunted books. You'll see photos that they may not have necessarily gotten the copyright and trademark permission for. And like Schiffer's very strict on it. You can go to the Library of Congress actually and ask for permission to use a lot of historical photos, but not everyone does get permission. And you have to get permission just to take photos. If you have, like, a friend, let's say I take a picture of Henry and I use that photo in my book, I have to have permission from Henry to use his representation and likeness in my book. So there's a lot of legal stuff, too, that people don't think about.
So what about the idea when they're doing stuff on crimes and they have, because a lot of times they'll have mugshots of people that just show up virally online and such, are those unusable? Are those technically, I would guess, are copyrighted by police or whatever, but they get out. They're like, here's what the person looks like. And
yeah.
It's almost like, when does public domain kick in?
That is tricky. So public domain and like community commons, that can kick in if somebody says, oh, hey, this is, like, a lot of the free music you hear, they're like, yeah, we're putting this out for public domain. Anybody can use it. That's fine. That's immediate. For copyright and trademark, they do have to refresh those. And Disney was in a tizzy they constantly are, because a lot of their older stuff before 1922, their copyrights expired. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle is actually another good example. He's the man who wrote Sherlock Holmes. Half of those stories are actually trademarked and copywritten to the Doyle estate. The other half are not. They're technically public domain. And his family has been fighting like mad to get those copyrights because they say, well, he wrote them, but he wrote them before 1922. So, and that's, they're still in legal issues. They're still in civilian court.
Isn't there also the concept that Sherlock Holmes as a character is technically public domain?
Yeah, because he was conceived before 1922, but he existed up through copyright, and they're still in a civil lawsuit over that. So that case has not been completed yet, and it's gotten completed and it's gone to appeals and the ruling has been reversed and they've done it a few times. but it...
Yeah, you get somebody like Lovecraft,
yeah,
whose stories have been basically... Everybody's borrowed from mm-hmm. them. August Derleth, a lot of authors are doing Lovecraft-like stories or stories about Lovecraft.
That's a little different.
And
that's,
I think it's...
That's a little different because when yeah. Lovecraft was writing, he actually had a massive circle of author friends, and they all contributed to what was called the Cthulhu Mythos, and mm-hmm. he welcomed people contributing to his little...
Do that, yeah.
Yeah.
So, he did. You know, yeah. Robert, in fact, a couple of Robert Bloch stories
yes.
were part of a trilogy in which Lovecraft wrote one of them because he had, Robert wrote to Lovecraft and said, "May I base a character on you?" And Lovecraft wrote this wonderfully flowery response indicating almost every conceivable way that his character can be is allowed to be destroyed, you know, eviscerated and sanctified and all this stuff. And so Rob wrote, I think Shambler from the Stars was the first one, and then Lovecraft wrote a sequel to it regarding calling the character Robert Blake, so that Bob's character killed off as well. And then I think it was after Lovecraft's death, Bob wrote the third story in that little trilogy.
Hmm. Yeah, but it's copyright and trademark is definitely something you want to look into if you're interested in writing, especially history books, because you'll be dealing with stuff that is in that gray area. Like a lot of those Victorian ghost photos, they actually are posthumously copywritten to estates, family estates, and that's the other thing people don't really remember. It's like, oh yeah, there are family members of these people, and they hold the rights to distribute the content. Yep. So, yeah. Fun times. And this is stuff that you are always, as a writer, I'm always concerned about. And that's why I bring it up, like, when Henry wants to play a piece of audio, I'm like, well, when was it published? Who is the creator? Because you need to know this stuff, because you can get sued and find yourself in civil court. Which I don't want to.
It's the same with photographers and yeah. artists too. We find ourselves in that boat, and a lot of us get, you know, these emails going back and forth saying, "I saw your photograph on this website,
yeah.
and
yeah.
Your watermark's gone."
Yeah,
you know it happens a lot.
One of my friends, who's an illustrator, she's very popular around the world, and she does very cutesy illustrations. And one of her fans in China found her illustrations on a lunchbox that was being sold in a alleyway in Beijing, let's say, and took a photo and sent it to her and said, "Hey, did you know somebody has lifted all of your artwork and is now printing it copyright free here in China?" That happens a lot. It's happened to numerous friends of mine, and our watermarks will be taken off because there's people who can do that. And so we really rely on our fan bases to be kind of the eyes and ears for when things like that happen.
Well, I think it's about break time. We're going to
take
a quick little break. And
I'm sorry to be dissuading people from writing books, but understand there's a lot of responsibility with it. Because I know some of the people in the chat room are like, "Wow, I'm never writing a book now." Yeah, just
English words are copyrighted in the dictionary.
No. Yeah. Oh, it's a mess. A lot of waiting that I had for the book was waiting for responses for permission to use certain content. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will listen to some of the EVPs and stuff that we've gotten from some of the various places that Kat and I have been to, and some places that I've been to that Kat wasn't able to be with. So,
my Queen Mary, all right?
I probably have it somewhere. I don't know if I've got it in with all these others. I'd have to look and see. But anyway, if I see it, I'm not going to have time to play all of them anyway, but if I see it, we'll throw it in there. With that, we're going to take a quick break, maybe about 5 minutes, maybe a little longer, not much longer. And Jeff will take us out, and Cece will get to bring us back. How's that sound?
Hello, you're listening to the Paranormal View. Happy New Year on this January 3rd, 2015. Feel free to stay tuned after the break for cool DVDs.
You know, there's nothing like a great memory of a great time. And if you grew up during the 1950s, 60s, 70s, or 80s, boy, have we got the memories for you. There was no time more innocent than the 1950s or 60s, nor was there a time more politically explosive. Hi, this is Steve Shockley, a.k.a. The Shock. Join me live every Friday and Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern for a Baby Boomer Rock with a Shock sock hop on rockwithashockradio.com.
There's a darkness in the hallway. Voices that seem to come from nowhere. Alone at night, there is a feeling that something or someone is near. Where can you go? Who can you turn to? Para-X Radio and the all-new Para-X Vision can help. Our knowledgeable host and expert guest can help you find some answers and take a glimpse into the unknown. Para-X Radio and Para-X Vision, programming for the open mind.
I found it at last! Marla's Sacred Cauldron. This is the legendary artifact that has been whispered about in hushed tones for hundreds of years, and now it's mine! All mine!
Who dares defile the sanctity of my castle walls? Step away from the cauldron, you impertinent, muddy metal maltworm.
Never! I've spent half my lifetime trying to discover your age-old secret of stirring the cauldron!
Oh, for Merlin's sake, that's no deep, dark secret. Just tune into the Para-X Radio Network Thursday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern for more cauldron stirring than you can shake a wand at.
Oh, well, in that case, I guess I don't need to take up any more of your time, so I guess I'll be going!
Not just yet. We've got a little unfinished business to take care of.
That's Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network.
Rhett, where are you going?
I'm going back to the Paranormal View, back where I belong.
Please, take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs and all kind of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear...
Line!
Oh, you've got to be kidding.
But it's the Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, Kat Kloko, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
Para-X Radio presents Real Persons of Genius.
Real Persons of Genius.
Today, we salute you, Mr. and Mrs. Para-X show host.
Mr. and Mrs. Para-X show host.
Armed with nothing more than a laptop and a microphone, you hit the air to scare the bejesus out of your audience.
What the hell was that noise?
Like a dog peeing on a fire hydrant, you always whet our appetite for more.
I just can't get enough.
Whether it's witches, ghosts, fairies, or Bigfoot, we admire your ability to set aside reality and believe anything anyone tells you.
Seek professional help.
So the next time you're kneeling in front of your 8x10 glossy of Dave and Tom lighting a candle, Remember, if it wasn't for you, I might be able to sleep without the lights on.
Mr. and Mrs. Para-X Soho.
Para-X Radio Network, powered by CBS.
And welcome back, everybody, to the Paranormal View here on Para-X Radio. We want to thank all of you for tuning in tonight. We had a very short cancellation earlier, and nonetheless, we are having a really, really great conversation on paranormal business, for lack of a better word, I guess. There is a lot of work that people don't think that goes on in writing these paranormal travelogues. And it's really nice to be able to hear that.
No problem. Now that I've scared everyone away.
Well, I mean, like, there's a lot of stuff that goes into this, and a lot of background that people don't.
Yeah, there's a lot of footwork.
It's tedious.
It is very tedious.
It's tedious.
And as they were saying in the chat room, yeah, there's a significant other in my life that helps a lot with the financial stuff, because when I am working. So,
yeah, because folks, after that book gets published, the checks just don't start rolling in.
Nope.
And they're not, you know, thousands of dollars per check, and you don't get them every week, and it's
What is it called? I just forgot. Your advance. You hear about writers getting advances. I know, like, the character Carrie Bradshaw from Sex and the City got an advance for her book in the TV show. Advances really only happen to fiction writers like Stephen King, and that's that branch. I did forget to mention that this is just the branch for writing paranormal history. Most of our publishers are very small. You don't get an advance. And I am going to reveal one of my paychecks from last year. Get ready for this paycheck. $1.13.
I can't count that high.
So much money. I know. I can't even buy a soda from a vending machine.
And that comes from just the books that you bought, right?
Yeah, that one was from, I got a royalty check for the books that I bought to sell at conventions. I was just like, this is pathetic. I have basically paid myself with taxes. All these taxes taken out. So, yeah. And yes, you get to file your own taxes, too. So,
I had a friend actually post a picture of a 3-cent check.
Yep.
I'm like, it costs more to print it out and put it in an envelope and mail it.
That's the behind the scenes that most people doesn't realize. Yep.
Yep. So, yeah, do it for the love of the topic.
That's what you have.
Completely.
The only upside to being a paranormal author is a lot of times you get invited to the events to be able to speak on.
Yes.
That's where you get your, and then you can sell your books at the event. Not necessarily you sell a lot of them, but that's just stuff on the side that you get then.
Yeah, I make a very sad joke at events, and I'm trying to do my sales pitch to get people to buy copies of my book. And you can find copies of my current book, Haunted Hoosier Halls, Indiana University, at Amazon.com. But also, I'll be at events saying, yeah, I need to drive home and I need gas money. Quite literally, I need gas money. So I need to sell one or two books to make it home. So yeah, that's a very sad joke that I make. It's self-deprecating, but it's true.
Now, when you go to like an event or something and you have like a stack of books to sign and sell, do you buy those like at cost or wholesale or something and then sell them at retail, or how does
that that is basically how it's done. So in different publishers and different amounts you get different discounts basically. So if I wanted to buy a different book from Schiffer though, I can also apply my author discount to that. It's not a huge discount. Like, you would think, oh yeah, because I wrote this book, you're getting this huge discount, and you're not. So I remember, and this kind of broke my heart, but I had to be the cold-hearted salesperson slash owner of a small company, I guess. I'm not even a company. But anyway, there was a woman at a convention a few years ago, about 2011, who came up to me, and she's like, she was very disheveled. She was wearing sweatpants that were kind of dirty, and her hair was a mess, but she really was into the paranormal. And she's like, I would really want a copy of your book, but I don't have $15 to spend on it, because that's how much I charge at conventions for my books. And I'm like, okay, I'm sorry to hear that. She goes, would you be willing to sell it to me for $5? And I looked at her and I'm like, no, I'm not.
It cost me more than that.
Yeah. Lose me. I didn't get the book for $5. Right. So, but I didn't tell her that. And I had to be very polite, but say to her, no, I'm sorry. I'm happy you have interest in my book. If you look on Amazon, you can find it for a cheaper price, though I haven't personally signed it and doodled in it and stuff like that. But I had to refuse, and because as a sole proprietorship, which is what I'm actually listed as, I have to make money too.
That's right.
So
you got to pay for the vendor table and everything.
Yeah, I have to pay for the vent. Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of people, maybe in our chat room and listening audience, are like, yeah, I've been there. You go to an event, you pay for the table, you pay for your transportation, you pay for your hotel, and you pray to whomever God you may pray to that you make enough back to be in the black.
Right.
And it's sometimes that, and most of the time that does not happen. There's been many, many conventions I go to where I am in the red.
Right. You just pay to be there, and you don't make any money to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
That is the very hard truth. I did not sugarcoat anything.
We're going to listen to a few of the EVPs now, so you can get you a headset, put it on, turn your sound up, and one of the first ones that I'm going to play here was from Hillview Manor. My son Tim and another friend Carrie was with us, and we were, I think it was on the third floor, in the caretaker's apartment, in the bathroom. The two of them was in there doing an EVP session, and I'd went out somewhere and was just coming back to where they were, when all of a sudden we heard this. So turn your sound up and see if you can hear it.
What the hell?
What?
Oh.
What?
It worked. It worked.
And it worked. Can you do that again, please?
What did?
Now, what this was Tim and Carrie was in there doing an EVP session, and all of a sudden there was these two big stomps right in between where they were. They come running out trying to see if somebody had slipped in or done something or whatever. They wasn't anybody around. They had no idea where it come from. Just two big stomps right in between them, like to freak them out. So that's one of the things that we caught at Hillview. And let's see, I got another one here. Oh, this one here. Kat and Carrie was with me. And we were upstairs where the cafeteria was. And the way that they told us, if you stand on one side where the servers would be at, they said you won't get anything, but if you stand on the other side where the people would come down to get their food, they said you can get stuff. So after we did our show, we went back up there, and I was sick. I had a sore throat, wasn't feeling good, and we were standing on the side where the people would have went down to get their food. And see if you can hear what goes on.
Do you have any coffee?
Could you hear the yeah?
Yeah, I can. I do.
There wasn't anybody in there but just us three and this guy. Yeah.
Yeah, the closest people to us were down the hallway, and it was a couple of kids, really, and then Bruce Tango, who was behind us, but he didn't say a word.
Right, and we didn't actually hear that until we went back and listened to it on a recorder, but it was just plain as day. You get a yeah. I thought that was just so neat. So that just goes to show you that there are things at Hillview Manor that you can get EVPs from. Good ones, too. Not something that you have to try and, oh, yeah, this is what it said type thing. No, you can actually hear what's being said. So I like it when it's like that. Too often I hear people play stuff and they start telling you, oh, this is what it is. And there's no way in the world you can even think about trying to make it out to what they're saying it is. If it's close, something that's close, you can, you know, go with that. But no, a lot of stuff that they play, you wonder, scratch your head, how they even come up with it. So, but
that's like the ghost box. The ghost box has that loud white noise, and they'll say, "See, they're clearly doing the Gettysburg Address," and all I hear is,
"Yeah, right, And you wonder how they come up with that.
Exactly. Goodness.
Yeah. Let's see which of this one here was from a house that I used to do a lot, and it was out in the old barn. I was up in the what used to be the attic, but the place had been refurbished and made into a studio where a woman would do Pilates and all those kind of exercise things and painting, and she taught painting and all that. And after I found out that her house and the barn was haunted, I could go there just about any time I wanted to. And I was upstairs by myself, sitting down in what used to be the loft. And see if you can hear what goes on here.
What is your name?
Now this, this was when I asked a question, "What is your name?" You hear footsteps. This upstairs was completely carpeted, and that sounded like boots on a hardwood floor. So, where that come from? Have no idea. There wasn't anybody up there but me. And right at the end of it, you hear this guy say, "Hey," so. I'm not sure if everyone was able to hear that or not, but it was very easy to hear it. Sometimes you can't hear it real good when you play it back over the microphone and stuff, but that one's pretty pretty interesting. So let's see. We've got a lot of others here. Let's see. These, which ones are these? It's supposed to be Ty. Here we go. This one here was taken or caught at the Bell Nursing Home. And Kat and I was there. We were down in the day room talking, doing EVPs. And this one here, you can hear it fairly easily also. See if you can hear it.
Can you point
it,
Lisa,
it was kind of
funny. Point to Lisa, not my flashlight.
Now this was caught right after Kat said this is not my flashlight. You hear a little girl say, "Please wake up," and we have no idea if someone had fallen asleep or someone had passed or what. But I have also heard now that there has been other people that has caught the same EVP there. So that's pretty interesting when other people catches it. Let's see. This one here was caught at a private residence that we've been doing. And I've been getting a lot of stuff from this house. But this one was a very weird one. And see if you can hear it. And then I'll explain it to you. Now, this house, everybody would stay out in the garage and only three or four people would come in the house at a time to investigate. This was a woman who had been in the bathroom and was going back out into the garage. Actually, she had been in the living room investigating a little bit beforehand. But then, after she went to the bathroom, she was going back out into the garage. And you hear this weird voice. And not really sure what it was, but we think what it says is the B word and done. Like, this person's done, and she's going back out. Apparently, they didn't like her. So I'll play it for you one more time and see if you can hear it. So that is another weird one from one of those places. Let's see where this one. Oh, this one here. We every now and then we catch things on our show. And I believe this is the one.
This one was weird.
Yeah, and I think that's what this one is. I'll have to play it to see if that's what it is. So listen close. Here it goes.
No, never.
Yeah.
Joe.
What?
Who just said Joe? Who just said
Joe? I don't know. It wasn't me.
Some a male's voice suddenly said Joe.
And yes, a male voice did say Joe. We have no idea where it come from. It wasn't none of us. How it got on there, where it come from, we have no idea. But all of a sudden, you hear somebody say Joe. I'll play it for you one more time.
No, never.
Yeah.
Joe.
What?
Who just said Joe?
I don't know. It wasn't me.
Some a male's voice suddenly said Joe.
Actually, it was probably either Kat or Barbara that said that. So.
Yeah, because little does everyone know I'm masking my voice. I'm really a man.
Let's see.
But weren't we interviewing a person who works with UFOs, too? Like, works on UFOs?
We were...
The subject of UFOs?
We were talking to the ghost soldiers.
Really?
Yes, because we was talking... Wasn't that the one we was talking about, Area 51?
I could have sworn we were speaking to somebody who was a ufologist.
Really?
Yeah.
At some point. I'm pretty sure we've had ufologists on.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
I think I don't think it was the Ghost Soldiers.
No, that was me clicking on the wrong thing. So that wasn't...
I thought your pizza had arrived. Pizza, fruitcake topped pizza.
Let's see here. I've got... And I'm trying to find one... I had a bunch of them, and we're just not going to have time to be able to play all of them. I'm trying to find the one that we had, that Jeff had.
Oh, the Queen Mary? And by the way, in May of 2014, we had Bill Burns of UFO Hunters. We had Lizette Larkins in December of 2013 of Authoring Ufology. We had Stan Gordon in September of 2013 of Ufology.
I think it was Sam Gordon.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember it being in the fall, like early fall.
And December 2011, we had Preston Bennett. And didn't we have, this might be him, Paul Hellyer. Remember, the former Canada Minister of Defense? He was our guest in August of 2011. But yeah, we've discussed UFOs.
Yeah.
Jeff, I know I've got that somewhere, but I don't see it right offhand. Have you got it real quick?
I don't. No, I might. You know, I might. I wonder if I do. I wonder if I can find it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well,
I'd have to send it to you. I wouldn't be able to play it over the phone.
All right. Well, send it to me. I'll put it in the archives here, so I'll have it next time. Because I do have so many of them. They're all over the place.
And I'll send you I have it on YouTube, so I can also send that out.
Okay. Let's see. A couple others that we just did and had on a show at the beginning of December with a little girl who we had a medium there, and she would be saying different things, and all of a sudden we'd be getting answers to the things that she would be saying. She was talking about this little girl that was supposed to be in there in the living room with us. And all of a sudden she says she misses her mommy. And I'll let you listen to that one real quick, like, so turn your sound up and listen real close.
She's saying she misses mommy.
And you hear this little girl, right after she says she misses her mommy, you hear another mommy in the background. A little girl saying mommy, which I thought was very interesting that someone could be saying something like that and all of a sudden you get a answer to it. It's pretty interesting when that happens like that. A little later on, supposedly the little girl was not in the living room anymore. She went back somewhere else into the house and somebody was asking about the little girl. And the medium says that she's not up here any longer. And see if you can hear what the response to that was.
Oh, she's gone. Okay.
Yeah.
Can I say another question?
Yeah, that was still moving.
Bella's back there now. I don't think she's going to want to get into this area.
Now, up early on, you hear the little girl say hiding. She's no longer up there. Let's see if I can tell you exactly where it is that she says that.
Oh, she's gone. Okay.
Yeah.
Can I say another question?
Yeah, that was the moment set myself.
It's
back there now. I don't think she's going to want to get into this area.
It's right after Kat said, yeah. You'll hear a little girl say, hiding. See if you can hear that now. I'll play it one more time for you.
Yeah.
Can I say another question?
Yeah,
that was
still moving set myself.
Bella's back there now. I don't think she's going to want to get into this area.
I think one of the things that fascinates me a lot is you can get these clear voices from someone saying something like that on a recorder. I mean, we don't hear it until you go back and listen to it. But it's neat as all get out when you can get something on a recorder from somebody else saying something like that. I think it's just fascinating. The first EVP I ever got just kind of like blew me away. I said, oh, look what I caught. And I thought it was really, really neat. So we have all these places that we can go to, and they are active. Not these private residences, but places like Hillview, Post Town, Trans-Allegheny, Gettysburg, all these different places that you can actually go to and get things. And Jeff has posted the EVP that he got in the chat room. Jeff, you want to tell what it was?
It was a we were in the first class pool where little girl Jackie and older woman Sarah tend to hang out, and a ghost that Peter James used to call Grumpy, as well as Bob Davis calling him that. And in the dressing rooms, I was just letting my digital recorder record. And one of the many investigators there, because it was during Don Shy's week-long para event on the Queen Mary back in 2010, and you can hear the investigator saying, Jackie, can you see the lights? Can you see the lights? Meaning on her device. And you can hear the echo of her voice hitting the acoustics of our location. And then all of a sudden, you hear a voice that has no echo saying, on this side. And then you hear the investigator say, just continue to ask if she could see the light. So I posted the audio on a YouTube video where I transcribed the text as well. So, and I posted that in the chat room, and it's already going up on the report page and stuff.
All right.
Okay.
Our time is just shot right on by. We hope that everybody's enjoyed it, and we hope everybody has got a great start to a brand new year. The Paranormal View has lots of great things coming up this year. We're going to be traveling a lot more, I believe, and going to different conventions, and being able to do our show from live from different locations this year. So with that, Jeff, you've got 2 minutes, actually a minute and a half.
If you go to my website, jeffgould.net, jeffgould.net/2011pnz.htm. That's my Paranormal View homepage. You can look at previous report pages and links to our guests and author books and such like that, as well as other cool links. The podcasts are embedded on the report pages and on the hub page as well. Our official website is theparanormalview.com. We're on Twitter, as Pat will mention, and you can also do a search for me at Twitter at Real Badger, RealBadger. Please feel free to follow me, but be aware I'm stuck at Twitter's algorithm, so I have to wait until I get 2,000 followers before I can follow more than I'm already doing. So please feel free. And we're also on Facebook on the Paranormal View, the Community Map Magazine. Please like us, hit notifications, and keep an eye out through the week. We, you know, interesting articles and photos get posted there throughout the week. Thank you very much. Happy New Year.
All right, Kat.
Okay, everyone. You can follow the Paranormal View. Oh, where did Twitter just go? At Paraview Radio. You can also follow me at Kat Cloco or at Jinxed Comic. And speaking of Jinxed Comic, the first few pages of my new graphic novel, Jinxed, have just gone online. They went on January 1st. You can find my comic at www.jinxedcomic.com. That's JINXEDCOMIC.com.
All right. And, Barbara, you got anything you want to throw out there real quick?
Nah.
All right. Till next week, and we have Elaine Kuzmuskas with us next week. She will also be doing readings and talking predictions that she made last year on the show and new predictions for this year. So Till then, this is Henry Foister.
After Gould.
Barbara and Cat Cloco.
So good night, everybody.
The Paranormal View. The Paranormal View. The Paranormal View. The Paranormal View. Come back and listen to us again, if you dare. The Paranormal View from the Power X Radio Network. The Paranormal View.